Rock Hounds. Welcome to There's a Rock for That. This is the show that is all about crystals, gems, and rocks of all varieties, where we will explore the folklore, metaphysical properties, and healing applications of the stone people. I'm Pterodactyl, and I welcome you all. Whether you're here to connect with the Crystal Kingdom, or discover what your rocks are about, or even sail the mystic seas to the land of dragons where fairies greet us and unicorns gallop through magical forests to sacred stone temples, I'm so happy that you are here to share the experience. Today, I think it's going to be kind of a fun show. I think we're going to cover some of the basics, really. And a lot of you may already have your own ideas about the topic today, which is how to choose the right crystal for you. There's a lot of different approaches, but the reason I thought it would be important to talk about this today is actually this is probably one of the number one questions that I get asked, and I know people have when it comes to beginning to work with crystals. You know, what ones do I work with? How do I know I'm choosing the right one? You know, because you hear a lot of people talk about how, you know, maybe one piece of amethyst, you know, connects better than with them than another piece does, you know, even though it's the same kind of stone. So we'll get into that and some different approaches to that. And, you know, it's pretty basic, but yeah, I think it's important to talk about. And then later on in the show, in the second half of the show, we will be discussing this week's crystal guest, which is coral. And we'll be talking about, you know, the ways in which we can work with coral, how to identify real coral from fake coral, and just, you know, what is coral exactly? Because it's not really a crystal, is it? So we will get into all of that later on. I did want to also mention that later on this week, I think on the, I want to say on the 26th, on the Attune Magazine radio network here, Gene Moore and Mag Lukowski are bringing back a great episode of Angels Love You. I think that's the name of it. And their guest this week is author and you know, angel deck creator and co-creator with Orion Virtue, Radley Valentine. And so anytime they have Radley on their show, it's really a great show. So I just wanted to give a little shout out to them and wish them a good show. And definitely I'll be tuning in, and I hope that you will as well. And don't forget, it's still July, so make sure you go over to attunemagazine.com and check out the latest issue of Attune Magazine. Okay, let's get right into it. Let's talk about this concept of choosing crystals. You know, some people, you know, it's very complicated for them, and other people it really isn't, you know, at all. So, you know, there's no one way to do it. You know, if you are, it depends on what it is. Like if you have a specific reason, and I don't believe you have to have a reason to want to get a crystal, but if you have a specific reason to get one that's connected to healing a certain ailment, that is one way to choose crystals. You can kind of start with that. And, you know, there's a lot of information out there. You can work with, you know, about crystals for certain ailments or symptoms. You can actually work, you know, with the symptoms that you have. You can take a look at books like either The Crystal Healer by Philip Permit or The Crystal Prescriptions. Volume 3 is coming out later this year by Judy Hall. And, you know, the first volume of Crystal Prescriptions, which the book we reviewed on the show early in the year, we talked about how that book is rather unique because it is it's like a directory listed by different symptoms or ailments or conditions that you might have. And then it lists, you know, a variety of crystals that might benefit you if you work with them to try to ameliorate those symptoms. So that's one way. You can look it up. You can say like, oh, I have arthritis. So, you know, and look up, you know, crystals for arthritis, either in a book. You can either look online and see what people have suggested, you know, and look for always when you're looking for a stone to work with healing, it's great when you can find people that share, and a lot of people do on blogs and stuff, where they'll share their own personal experience where they have that condition and they found certain stones to be beneficial for it. Because sometimes that's helpful, because there's a lot of sources out there that, you know, it's just kind of a laundry list of stuff that they got, you know, somewhere else, and they don't necessarily have the firsthand experience and can tell you, you know, what it was like for them. And I always think that that's a little more helpful. And then there's always this experimentation as well, you know. And you can also look at things like working with the chakra system. You know, it's easy to find, you know, associated disorders, diseases, and organs, and, you know, parts of the body that are connected with the different chakras. And then also you can work with the traditional colors of the chakras and find stones of those certain colors to work with things that are affected by that area of the chakra. That's just another approach that I know a lot of people take as well. But, you know, that's if you're really, you know, looking specifically, you know, for a healing crystal, for a specific condition. You know, a lot of times, you know, it's just a matter of going into a store that sells crystals and kind of browsing around. You know, and when you do go into a store, especially like a, you know, a rock shop, you might not find this all the time to be true in a lot of, you know, kind of the, you know, variety kind of metaphysical stores where crystals aren't necessarily the focus. They just have some there. But it's always good to source them. Meaning, you know, ask the salesperson, or, you know, sometimes you've got to go to like their, you know, on-site expert if they have one, or even the store owner, and ask them where they got the crystals from. Because a lot of times, you know, that's important to people is where the stones come from. So that's another aspect of choosing a crystal. You know, there you can put as much research into it really as you would like to, and then you can put absolutely no research into it at all. You know, a great way, I think, that I do a lot when it comes to choosing the crystals that I get is really just using my intuition. You know, there's a saying that, you know, sometimes we find the crystals and other times they find us, you know. And you can find them. You could actually go and you know, dig them up yourself. You could buy them. You could receive them as a gift from someone. You could go to, you know, some of the mines and quarries out there that allow you to dig, you know. But, you know, ultimately, if you go by your own feelings and intuition, you know, I think that a lot of times you get more out of the experience and find, you know, the right stone. You're more likely to find a stone that you'll really see and, you know, feel benefit from, you know. You know, it's interesting, though, you know, because a lot of people talk about, you know, the store that you go to and the energy there. And there's some people that are really kind of sticklers, are really sensitive to that, you know. Like there was a store in California I used to go to where, you know, it was one of those kind of, you know, variety metaphysical stores where they had a little bit of everything. And, you know, I had friends that would never buy their crystals there because they also sold stuff to do with, you know, witchcraft, you know, and for some reason, you know, they were, like, really bothered by that idea that the crystals were there, and they were afraid that they were absorbing the energy from stuff they didn't want to connect with. So, you know, that's something to keep in mind. You know, you always keep your eyes open, and, you know, if you listen to your intuition, and if you get a good vibe, then great. And if you don't get a good vibe, then yeah, maybe that's not the place to shop for you, you know. Because, you know, it takes one thing, I think, is kind of, you know, something to be, you know, just aware of is that it's quite a journey for the crystal to get from, you know, its home in the earth to the to the storefront, right? And, you know, who handles it along the way? What is it exposed to? You know, what kind of energies are there? Were there positive energies of the person who mined it? Was there positive energy of the person who bought it or imported it? You know, what kind of transportation was used? You know, what kind of conditions were happening while the, you know, during the journey of the crystal, you know, to the store where you happen to see it on the shelf, you know, all of those things, you know, can be taken into consideration. I know people that really do take them into consideration, but, you know, it's not like a urine sample, right? Usually there's not a big, you know, documented chain of custody, you know, for the stones that we purchase. So, you know, that's what makes cleansing so important, right? You know, and also, you know, our own, you know, energy and vibrations, you know, make a big difference when we finally give them a home. You know, to me, personally, I look at it this way. It's kind of like adopting a pet, right? I mean, you go to an animal shelter, you see all these adorable puppies and kittens and what have you there. And, you know, a lot of them have been through a lot. Maybe they haven't been in great homes. Maybe they were abandoned. Maybe their mother died. You know, they all have their, you know, background. They all have their energy. And ultimately, at the point that you meet them at the shelter, you know what they need? They need a good home, regardless of what they've been through. And that's the way I feel about crystals as well. You know, that ultimately, it's not about judging what they've been through. You know, it's about really, you know, the energy we bring to it and providing a home for them. You know, I kind of think of it as adoption. Okay, so that's just my take on it. But say, okay, you're in a store that you like, you have a good vibe and everything, and there's a bunch of stones there, and you know, you're drawn to, well, let's say the amethyst stones that are all sitting there together. You know, an interesting thing that will happen is that, you know, you'll be like, well, I don't know which one. There's like 50 of them laying there, you know, or they're in a little, you know, they put the stones in those little bins, you know, the same types a lot of time, you know, or a little basket or something. And so really, you know, what you can kind of do is just kind of try to like clear your head, try to sort of relax. And see what catches your eye. You know, look at the stones and until one really stands out, you know. And, you know, pick it up, you know, put it in your hand and just try to see if you get any particular feeling from it. Your hand could get hotter. Your hand could get colder. It might not be a physical sense of touch, actually, that makes a difference. It might actually be just like an emotional way that you feel connected to it. You know, all of those things are possible of ways of, you know, just going with our gut instincts and choosing the stone that's right for us, you know. And, you know, a lot of times it's a matter of timing too, right? You know, you know, we may think that we want a certain stone, but for some reason, when we think we want it, we cannot find it. And then, you know, it could be months later where we happen to find the one that we wanted before. But, you know, maybe that time when we thought that's what we wanted, really it wasn't what we needed, you know. So there is that divine timing that can kind of come into play too, and oftentimes you'll go into a shop and some stone will catch your eye and you'll be like, wow, that's it, you know, and it'll be just sort of an immediate kind of experience. And then, you know, the salesperson or the shop owner will say, wow, that's so weird, we just got those in today, you know. So those things can definitely happen. You know, it can be a magical experience, or it can be, you know, kind of a, I don't think it's ever really a mundane experience, you know. But, you know, the thing that's really kind of interesting is, you know, we're not always choosing crystals for us. Sometimes we want to choose them for somebody else, like to give them a gift, you know. And one way to do that, you know, it's really pretty easy, is to kind of visualize the person that you're choosing the crystal for and kind of project that person, that visual that you have of them in your mind's eye to the crystals, and see if any of the crystals respond. And how do they respond? They could respond by just catching your eye, by one seeming to kind of sparkle more, you know, all different kinds of ways. So, you know, it's like engage your, you know, your imagination and also your intuition, you know, when you're choosing them. Another thing that people do, because sometimes, you know, people want to be very, very quite specific. And I don't know if it's, you know, I think sometimes maybe it's a lack of confidence in them, in their own intuition or their own gut feelings. But, you know, some people would rather, you know, divine which crystal that they need. Now, that might sound like, you know, how in the world do I do that in a store or something? And it's really simple. You know, you could, you know, if you have a little pendulum, you could take a pendulum with you and you know, ask if that's the right one for me or not, you know. So you could douse for the right crystal that's going to benefit you the most at that time. And then sometimes, and this has happened to me, and I think I've mentioned it, you know, maybe you know, in passing on a previous episode, but, you know, like, oh, I know, when I was, I went to this shop that I really like in Santa Fe called Dinosaurs and More, and there was a stone that I wasn't really familiar with called Hanksite, you know, because it's not one that you see all the time. And I just kind of looked at it and thought, you know, really did catch my attention. I looked at it and I thought, that's really interesting. But Hanksite, I haven't heard much about that. I guess I don't need it, right? You know? So then I go home that night, and then I have this dream about that stone. So then I went back to the shop the next day and got the stone. But, you know, that's just the thing. You know, pay attention to what you're attracted to, what you feel drawn to, essentially, what seems to be trying to catch your attention, and also pay attention to dreams. Sometimes crystals come to us in dreams. They can come to us during meditation as well. And that's a fantastic way to choose a crystal. Like, I had a crystal just recently actually come to me in meditation. I haven't gotten the crystal. I haven't seen it in, you know, my waking life yet. But it was this really beautiful, kind of large, I guess, celestite kind of point. It looked sort of like a generator, celestite quartz. So I'm on the lookout for that whenever, you know, I guess whenever it comes into my life will be the right time for it to come into my life. That's just my philosophy on it. But, you know, there's a lot of different, you know, techniques that you're going to read about, you know. And then there also is something to be said about crystals that you actually may not be drawn to, and that you actually have a feeling that you don't like them. And the interesting thing about that is that that doesn't mean that they can't be very helpful to you, because, you know, there's a philosophy out there that if there are crystals that you like actually do not like you have that strong feeling, I don't like them, that may be because they're touching something very uncomfortable or deep within you that you thought you kind of blocked out or locked away. And, you know, there are some people that will have a really, really strong reaction to crystals, as if they're either physically repulsed by them, you know, or really upset by them. You know, people will cry sometimes even, you know. So, you know, don't feel silly if you find that you have a strong reaction like that. But what I would recommend is that you find out what kind of stone that is, and you read up on it, do a little research into that stone and the things that it may be used for metaphysically or that it may be connected with. And, you know, take a little time to kind of examine, like, if any of that connects with something going on in your life, you know, or maybe even in your past, you know. It can be, you know, that can be kind of a difficult process. A lot of times we don't want to deal with the things that upset us. You know, we don't want to confront certain things within ourselves. So we try to bury them. But ultimately, if we bury them, they're still within us and they haven't been dealt with, then sooner or later those things can surface, and sometimes at the inopportune time. So, you know, you want to kind of deal with your stuff basically, you know, instead. You know, because, you know, anytime we're trying to, like, avoid something, you know, it's like anything else. You know, you can't run away from your problems. And, you know, crystals are definitely really great at showing us sometimes the things that we are trying to suppress within ourselves. So, you know, that's something to think about. And I think that that really plays into, you know, a lot of the things that people will talk about with the intensity sometimes of working with crystals is they can bring up old issues. They can bring up these things. And that can be really upsetting if it's something that we've tried really, really hard not to think about or not to deal with. So this is just something to keep in mind. But ultimately, you know, most of the time, you know, the crystal, you know, will bring this out because it knows it needs to surface in order to be healed. So it's not something you ever have to worry about avoiding or trying to repress again, because, you know, it takes more time, more energy, more effort to repress something and to avoid something than it does to actually, you know, deal with it and cleanse it and release it. So it's just, you know, something to think about with that. And, you know, there's also the issue, you know, I've had a lot of people ask this, you know, I've gotten a few emails from listeners about, you know, how do I choose a crystal online, right? Because a lot of times, you know, we have a lot of people that, you know, don't have a lot of, you know, great rock shops around them. You know, they're not living in Tucson or some place like that. And, you know, maybe even, you know, some of these smaller towns that don't even have a metaphysical shop. Plus, you know, in the last so many years, you know, last couple decades or so, you know, we've seen a lot of the, you know, really cool little, you know, local metaphysical stores, you know, across the country, you know, end up closing because they just, you know, they weren't getting enough businesses to stay open and to, you know, pay the overhead. So, you know, that means that a lot of us now, you know, have the last resort in the sense of buying stones online. And so one, you know, how do we know that it's a good deal? And how do we know that it's a good place to get our stones from and that we can trust the seller to be selling what they say they're selling? Because as we've, you know, we've touched upon this a little bit, but there are a lot of fake stones out there. And then also, you know, how do we even know that we are going to connect with the particular stone that we get? Right. It becomes this whole complicated issue. And, you know, you hear all the time about people buying stones on eBay or buying stones on Etsy. And, you know, some people have great experiences and other people it's like hit or miss. Right. I can just say, you know, I've been lucky enough to have really good experiences with buying stones online. There are a few different websites, actually, you know, that I would recommend checking out. The first one would be tomstones.org. That's TOMSTONES.org. And Tom, the guy that runs the website, is really a lovely person, and he actually, you know, he takes the job seriously. You know, he is a crystal healer himself, and, you know, a pranic healer too, I believe, and Reiki. he does all the healing kind of stuff, and he's really, really into stones. He's been on George Norrie's show and Melinda Carver's Positive Perspectives. You may be familiar with the name already, and you know, I've had wonderful experiences getting stones from him, and he handpicks them out. You know, I think that he really focuses, you know, on the customer and what those needs are, and he will pick out certain, you know, the the individual stones for that person. So, you know, he doesn't carry every single stone under the sun, but there is a stone in particular that you're interested in. You can always shoot him an email as well through his website, tomstones.org, and tell him what you're looking for, and he could probably either get it for you, or he may even recommend something that might suit you better too, if you're not really sure, you know. So that's one place that I would definitely recommend. And what's really lovely about it is when you get your stones from him, you know, you get this whole, you know, he sends you, I guess it's the receipt, you know, will have the names of the stones and everything. And a lot of times he'll write little personal notes on there on how he thinks you should work with them. And it's very individualized. It's not stuff that he just tells everybody. It has to do with, like, connecting with you. Because he's a distance healer, so he can connect with your energy, you know, and get a feel for it. So definitely check out tomstones.org for a really nice personalized experience. The prices are great. They're very much, you know, in line with, you know, what you would pay and not on the high end, which is terrific. I mean, they're definitely, definitely affordable. Now, on the higher end of things, you know, I would say check out Exquisite Gems. I think that's the name of it. Let me look it up here right now. Exquisite. I always get this a little bit. Is it right? Okay. Or is it Exquisite? Oh, no. ExquisiteCrystals.com. And, yeah, ExquisiteCrystals.com. They are really kind of amazing. They have a wonderful selection of different stones and specific stones as well. And I think that they really, really do care about the customers too. I've had great success with them as well. And they always send you a little, you know, a little something extra, a little sample of maybe a different stone that they would like you to check out, which is really kind of a cool thing to do. Not everybody does. And then the third place that I would recommend is the Uncarved Block. And that is, they have an interesting kind of, you know, website. Where is it? Let me see if I can find it here. Uncarved Block. It is actually, the website for that is the dash uncarved, the Uncarved Block. So it's www.the-uncarvedblock.com. And they have some really, really, really terrific gems and minerals from, like, around the world. They're really good at telling you exactly where they came from. They're total rock hounds over there. And what's kind of fun is they do auctions also. They do weekly auctions on Facebook, you know, where they'll auction, like, several stones at a time. And so that's really kind of a fun way, too, to choose crystals. So, and again, that website, because it's a little bit different, is the-uncarvedblock.com. So I would definitely check them out. Definitely check them out on Facebook, because it's really kind of cool that they have their little auctions on there. I'd say they're definitely one of the better places. Their prices are good, for sure, and they really take care in the packaging of them when they ship them to you, and I really, they take really great pictures of them. That's the thing too with shopping online, is you want to make sure it's someplace that really does, like, a professional job of listing and photographing their stuff, so you can really, really see what it looks like, you know, not just one face of a stone. As we know, they have several different faces, so you want to see, like, the back view, you want to see where it came from, you want to get an idea of how large the piece is, you want to find all that information. And then also, another thing that you can do is you can douse the internet like that, you know. So, like, say you go to the Crystals.com, right, or ExquisiteCrystals.com or TomStones.com or whatever, you could actually, you know, use your pendulum or whatever and say, like, is this the stone for me, while you're looking at the picture or pointing to the picture. Because, you know, okay, so like with TomStones and with Exquisite Crystals, you know, they'll have a variety of the stone that's pictured, right? So you're not necessarily going to get the one in the picture, but with the uncarved block, it is the stone that they are picturing. So then that kind of makes it a little more easy to choose the exact specimen of that particular type of stone that you're getting. So, you know, there's some ways to still work intuitively, even, you know, with technology. Because, you know, I know that, you know, sometimes that's kind of a worry, like, you know, it doesn't feel as personal, you know. But what are you going to do if you live somewhere where there aren't any crystal shops around or any metaphysical stores? So it's something to think about. All right. Well, trying to think, you know, was there anything I wanted to mention here? I think that really kind of covers it, you know. And, you know, I think, you know, the one other thing I would say is, you know, yeah, sometimes, you know, stones are gifted to us. And I think that you can't discount, you know, the synchronicity of that, you know, that this particular person chose that particular stone for you at that particular moment, you know. There might really be like a significance to all of those actions, you know. So it's something to think about and maybe not take for granted, you know. All right. Well, we're going to take a short break here to hear a word from our lovely network. And then when we come back, we will talk about this week's crystal guest, Coral. We'll be back in just a minute. Stay tuned, everybody.
Schedule your reading with one of the psychics at Attune. PsychicsAtTune.com. Have you always wanted to create your own tarot or oracle deck but thought you needed to be a graphic artist? Self-published decks are really hot right now, and I could show you how to do this. No Photoshop required. Contact me, Mary Nail, at marynail@attunemagazine.com.
www.theresarockforthat.com. Visit the website where there's a stone for that, an idea for that, a story about that, and even a reading with solutions for that, because, well, we just happen to rock like that. Need to relax? Or raise your vibration? Want to know how gems, crystals, and rocks can enhance your life? Get a crystal consultation. For entertainment purposes only, crystal consultations do not in any way replace treatment by licensed healthcare professionals. Come explore the wonders of the Crystal Kingdom at www.theresarockforthat.com.
Welcome to Attune Magazine Radio.
We are back, and you are listening to There's a Rock for That on the Attune Magazine Radio Network. Okay, so it's time now to talk about this week's crystal guest, Coral. So what is coral? Coral is not a mineral, but it's really kind of a substance that's exuded from tiny marine animals that are called coral polyps, you know. The calcium carbonate material that they secrete hardens and forms in branch-like deposits. If you're listening online, you can see in the slideshow there on the show page here, there's a picture of fossilized coral. That's a piece that I have. There's a a picture of live coral, like it looks in the ocean. You know how beautiful and colorful it is. And then there's also a picture from the Brooklyn Museum, I think, of a coral necklace that they have there, on display. So, you know, you'll see a lot of different, you know, varieties of coral, a lot of different colors and stuff. Coral polyps grow throughout the world's tropical waters. They have a temperature above, 20 degrees Celsius. Usually they're found in shallow water. Some varieties are found as much as 1,000 feet below the surface. Coral deposits can, be a variety of colors. It can be pink, kind of an orangey pink, or an orange, a blue, red, black. The black variety has actually kind of become quite rare and really expensive. And it's also kind of risky, too. There's this kind of poisonous effects of the dust released when black coral is cut, which makes the harvesting and cutting of it quite risky. But, a lot of it is kind of local, too. The popularity of the various colors of coral, often have to do with, the local customs and folklore. Red, or what they call precious coral, has remained the most popular. Deep red coral, called oxblood, is highly prized. But in some other, some countries, pink, or what they call angel skin coral, can be the most expensive. And gem-quality coral is uniform in color and able to take a high polish. When we get into kind of the background of coral, the Greeks are kind of the source of the name and original folklore surrounding coral. The Greek name for pebble, corallion, is thought to be the origin of the modern name, coral. Greek gem poet Orpheus stated that coral is, quote, the gift of Minerva. And he related a fable that it originated when the newly severed Gorgon's head was laid down by Perseus on the seaweeds, which the issuing gore turned to stone. And he continued to by claiming it baffles witchcraft, counteracts poison, and protects one from tempests and robbers. He also listed coral as the farmer's friend. And said if powdered and mixed with ground seed corn, it was supposed to protect crops from thunderstorms, blight, caterpillars, and locusts. And in the 2nd century BC, it was said to make the person who wears it unconquered, powerful, and able to be touched, free from fear and care, and able to give orders easily and have easy access to the great. These ideas about coral, from the 2nd century onward, kind of continued with other writers of note, like Pliny the Elder, expanded a lot of those beliefs in his Natural History. He wrote the coral quieted storms at sea and preserved the wearer from tornadoes and lightning strikes. And the Romans, also recommended a collar made of flint and Maltese coral as a cure to hydrophobia in dogs. If dogs were afraid of the water, if you made a collar out of flint and Maltese coral, that was supposed to make them not afraid of the water. And not only that, but that collar was also thought to keep the spell of the evil eye. Back then they were so concerned about the evil eye, from affecting dogs, which is kind of interesting because I never had heard a lot about people worried about the evil eye affecting dogs, but I guess, that was a thing, back in Roman times. And the hanging of coral branch necklaces around the necks of children was thought also to protect them from, the evil eye and to preserve their young teeth. Coral gems during the time of the Roman Empire were to be cut from freshly gathered material and had to be of a really, really bright color in order to be considered to have any power. And it was believed that if cut coral was broken unintentionally, that, you know, or by accident, that it would lose all its power. Roman physicians even prescribed a tonic, like a tincture of coral, for a number of illnesses. It was used to cause people to sweat in order to reduce fevers. It was said to act as a diuretic and to drive off, you know, bad humors, as they called it back then, from the body. They'd prepare an elixir by boiling a branch of coral in melted wax and steeping the resulting product in alcohol. And it is thought that the alcohol was probably the active ingredient rather than the coral, right? But they'd also make a poultice consisting of saffron and coral that would be wrapped, you know, a lot of people aren't going to like this, that would be wrapped in the skin of a cat and tied around a patient's neck. And that was said to have these amazing curative powers. And adding emerald to the concoction was reported to magnify its ability to drive off the most severe fever. You know, coral was considered a remedy for a variety of human ills, even if it was powdered and mixed with water or even wine. You know, the many writers, you know, have added, you know, over the centuries to the folklore of coral. You know, in the 13th century theologian Albertus Magnus wrote that he had proved the ability of coral to slow the flow of blood, to cure madness, and to give wisdom to the person who wore it. He also said that wearing red or white coral, you know, would still tempest at sea and allow one to cross broad rivers in safety. And even Marco Polo, during the same time as Albertus Magnus, or at least in the same century, wrote that the use of coral as a personal adornment in the Himalayas and as a decoration in Tibetan temples. And he said that the priests held coral as well as amber and turquoise in very high regard. And coral had a religious significance for the lamas. Its color represented one of the incantations of Buddha. Camillus Leonardus gives a personal testimony, and when it comes to coral's protection of children, he said, I have had it from a credible person and have often experienced to myself that it will prevent infants just born from falling into epilepsy. You know, which, you know, when you think about it, it's a really interesting idea. You know, it has a lot of these things, I think, also had to kind of do with their understanding of things like epilepsy, you know. And they also, you know, there was a, you know, from the Middle Ages to the earliest, you know, very early 20th century, you know, women were advised to hide their coral from their husbands. The stone was said to change color in sympathy with a woman's monthly cycle. And modesty, of course, dictated a lot back then, that this change should not be observed by one's mate, right? And the custom was actually based on the belief that a gem could reflect the spirit of a living person. You know, in the 16th century, actually, there was a German physician, Johann Wittig, who wrote about, you know, the prognostication powers of coral, and the story goes that he was called to attend to a young man, and the young man was sick, and a red coral, which he then been a dirty yellow color, and finally became covered with black spots, and the physician Johann Wittig directed the guy's sister to remove the coral, for death was surely at hand when it ended up covered in black spots. And basically, you know, his prediction was thought to be true, because a few hours later the youth died. So who knows? You know, was it because the coral was changing color? Was that really indicating, you know, somebody was dying? I don't know. You know, it's a really kind of interesting thing, you know. You know, and coral also has had an association, you know, throughout all of these centuries, with being, it's something that could protect against ghosts and goblins and illusions and dreams and winds, tempt, you know, all these natural and kind of supernatural, you know, energies out there. And, you know, even the Roman Catholics added to the folklore of coral as when it came to the use of coral bells. And these special bells were said to frighten away evil spirits by their delicate jingle. And 18th century French writers recommended the wearing of a blood rosary. These are necklaces that became really popular as a safeguard against uncontrolled hemorrhaging. And they were carved out of coral. You know, it's been a valued gem throughout the world. You know, there's a, you know, there's a really kind of interesting thing. You know, it goes anywhere from, you know, like the Tibetans, the Romans, the Greeks, to India, to even in the Vedic texts of India, they relate the, they have a myth, a story about the origin of coral. And in the Indian mythology, Vala, a demon god, was slain and dismembered by the demigods, and parts of his body were strewn about the earth and universe to create the various gemstones we know of today. And the intestines of Vala were taken by the celestial serpent Vasuki, and he deposited them in the oceans around the world, creating the seeds of coral, which now grow in the sea. You know, so everybody's got their origin of the stone. You know, they're very kind of fascinating. Even the Native Americans in the southwestern United States had, you know, held the color red coral in particular in very high regard, and they would collect little pieces of actually red fragments of spiny oysters that they found in the Gulf of Mexico. This is something they did for centuries. And then when the Spanish explorers introduced coral in trade with Pueblo around the mid, I guess, 16th century, it soon spread to the Hopi and the Zuni tribes, and all of these tribes now place coral only second to turquoise as a very precious object. And anthropologists, you know, generally agree that the love of anything associated with the sea, particularly coral and shell, can be attributed to a very high value placed on water in arid regions. So, you know, coral is really, really kind of a fascinating stone, you know, and that's the folklore behind it. But, you know, how do we, you know, work with it today? You know, how do we benefit from it? And that's something that I also think is equally as interesting, because I think, you know, we see it often in jewelry, but I don't feel like it's one of the stones that is maybe thought of a lot or even highly prized that much when it comes to modern crystal healing. You know, it's not something that, you know, is on everybody's must-have list or that, you know, is really talked about very much. You know, so how can it help us, you know, on a physical, emotional, or spiritual level? You know, for one thing, you know, obviously it comes in all these different colors, so the color is going to play a part into it as well. But coral itself, you know, represents diplomacy and is said to quiet the emotions and to bring peace with the inner self. And that it can facilitate intuition and imagination and visualization, all those things that we talked about when it comes to, you know, choosing crystals. Coral can help facilitate, you know, or enhance our ability to tap into our imagination, our intuition, and to visualize, and can help us to, you know, on that same vein, you know, help us to kind of use the qualities of the mystical side of life. And some have said it can even help to bring one into communication with spiritual masters, you know, from the past. And that it can also, on a physical level, is thought to help strengthen the circulatory system and also the bones of the body, which makes a lot of sense when you think of the, you know, the calcium in it. And with that, you know, to stimulate tissue regeneration and has been used to nourish blood cells. Has also been used in the treatment of spinal cord disorders, the nervous system, and the thalamus. And, you know, we talked about, you know, specific, you know, colors of coral, red coral we talked about a bit, you know. Red coral in particular is thought to help one become in harmony with the natural forces of the universe and with the wilderness within one's own being, and can help one to be more practical with respect to, you know, balancing the material world with the spiritual world. And it's said, you know, because of the red color, to both open and activate the base chakra and to be helpful, actually, in a treatment of hiccups and heartburn. So those, you know, on a very basic level, you know, if you get the hiccups, you could, you know, get out a piece of coral and, you know, maybe work with that and see. That would be a really easy, non-invasive, you know, kind of way to see if it, you know, if it resonates with you in that way. And as always, you know, anytime that we talk about using crystals for, you know, the healing or helping with, you know, physical ailments, you know, I always like to, you know, remind people that I at least think it's a really good idea to make sure that you are seeking the proper medical treatment from a licensed medical professional if you think that you have a serious medical condition. You know, proper diagnosis is always going to be, you know, your first line of defense, and then that'll better inform you of what crystals may help benefit your healing process, or help alleviate symptoms even, you know. But, you know, the one thing that I think it is important to talk about with coral that I think is really interesting, and it's an easy thing to do, you know, we talk about there being, you know, a lot of fakes out there on the market, and coral is definitely something that has been faked a lot too, you know. So, you know, sometimes it's a little too good to be true, right? If you visit like a beachside resort on vacation and you see all these beautiful coral bracelets or necklaces and the prices are so great, you're like, wow, this is amazing. Chances are it's not real coral, because it's really, really easy to make fake coral. They do it all the time for aquariums, right? And you can make your own fake coral for your aquarium at home, you know, from, you know, for yourself, if that's what you want to do. But, you know, if you want a real piece of coral to work with, how do you tell if it's real or not, right? Because, you know, that's the thing. You know, this is something that has been, you know, admired and held in high regard and valued, you know, from as far back as 10,000 BC, you know, when they found coral jewelry in ancient grave sites. You know, and it was really popular during Victorian times, and enjoyed, you know, a kind of big boost of popularity again in the 1920s. But there are, you know, because of that, a lot of fakes out there that are made from either plastic or bone or shell, or even howlite and onyx sometimes are used to imitate coral. And then, you know, you have really, really low quality coral that they will fill with epoxy and polish to kind of hide the flaws in it, because, you know, the ones that are really valued are the ones that take a high polish and don't have the flaws and, you know, holes and depressions in them, you know. But if you really, really want the real thing, there are some things you can do to test it. So one of the easiest ways to tell if a piece of coral jewelry especially is real or not is how much it weighs. You know, real coral jewelry is heavier than the imitations. You know, the real coral is heavier than plastic. And then a test you can actually do on it is, say, you know, if you have some coral pieces at home and you're not sure, you know, if they're real or not, you can take the jewelry or the piece of coral, and you can put it in like a small ceramic bowl, and then you cover it with milk, you know, use cow's milk, right? And you leave the coral in there, the jewelry in the milk at room temperature for about 1 to 2 hours, right? And then after, say, 2 hours, if the coral is real, it will actually change the color of the milk. And if it's fake, it won't change the color of the milk. So that's something to, that's one way to do it. You know, just pour your coral a glass of milk, basically. And then another way to test if it's real or not is to, you know, you need like an eyedropper for this. So if you take one or two drops of lemon juice and put it in a place that's not going to, you know, really affect the look of it. If it's like a piece of jewelry, you do it like in the back piece that, you know, really nobody sees, right? But you take one or two drops of lemon juice and drop it onto the back of a piece of coral. And if the coral is real, that spot where the drops of lemon juice hit it will effervesce and form tiny little bubbles on the surface. So those are just a couple ways to tell if your coral is real or not. And like I said, you know, price is going to be one time to, you know, one way to tell as well. You know, I remember I used to go visit my mom in Florida, and there's like tons and tons of, you know, cute little, you know, shops with little kiosks, you know, on the beach, and everybody's selling, you know, coral jewelry. You know, really cheaply, but you know, very little of it was real. Like, you would find the real stuff in the shops in town. So that's just, you know, one thing to think about. And, you know, I think it does make a difference, you know, if it's real or not, you know, unless, you know, you're just buying it like you would any other piece of costume jewelry, then, you know, it really probably doesn't matter too much, because if you don't mind wearing plastic, then you're not going to mind wearing, you know, faked out coral. But if you do care, that's how you can tell, and that's really simple, inexpensive ways to test if it's real or not. All right, so what else did we want to talk about today? I think we kind of covered most of it, you know. And what's really great is next week, I wanted to let you know about next week's show. So next week is our end of the month open line show where you can call in with your questions or share your own stories from your crystal journey. You can call in to get a free crystal mini reading as well. And I'm trying to think of who is actually our crystal guest next week. And this is all next Thursday, same place, same time, 4 p.m. Eastern. I'm in Central Time, so I always want to say 3 o'clock, but it's not. It's not 3 o'clock. But yes, and our crystal guest next week is Serpentine, which we've talked about, you know, very specific kinds of serpentine. But I thought, you know, people have asked me, like, what is that? You know, I guess the name actually does sound kind of exotic. I think all these crystal names really, really are cool. But, yeah, so I thought let's just do an episode where we talk about serpentine and what it is. Because, it's, you know, sometimes people have a difficulty identifying it, and I've heard from a couple of people that are kind of afraid of it for some reason, and I'm not exactly sure what that is about. But anyways, we will maybe, you know, find out about that as we explore Serpentine next week. And again, we'll be taking your calls as our monthly open line show, and you can get a free reading or you can share your crystal journey. We've had some wonderful callers that have called in with some great questions and some really cool, unique experiences that they were kind enough to share. And, you know, I'd love that opportunity for us to connect and to learn from each other. So that's all on tap for next week. And don't forget, this weekend, I think it's the 26th, here on the Attune Magazine Radio Network, the Angels Love You Show with Jean Mori and Maggie Lukowski and their guest Radley Valentine, co-author of the Angel Tarot, the Archangel Power Tarot cards, and so many other things. And he's just really a blast to hear on their show. So you won't want to miss that. Check out attunemagazine.com for more details, and also Attune Magazine. Check out the channel and make sure you bookmark that episode, because it's going to be really awesome. In the meantime, that's it for us for this week. I hope that you all have an absolutely lovely weekend. Be safe, be happy, have fun, stay cool if you're experiencing any of this crazy hot weather that's going on across the country here. Oh my gosh, we're in the 90s all week here. I'm melting. Anyways, hopefully you can avoid that kind of extreme weather that we're having in some places. In the meantime, I will see you all next week. And bye-bye, everybody.